It's tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, bringing you an hour of crime. Later on, from a 1953 broadcast of Peril, but right now it's suspense with the story, The Statement of Mary Blake, from May 4th, 1950 on CBS.
And its 96,000 dealers present Miss Joan Bennett in Statement of Mary Blake, a suspense play produced and edited by William Speer.
I found myself at the far end of a long corridor, the length of it stretching before me in a winding pattern, the walls of it a thick, impregnable cement. There were no windows, only a small opening high on the wall to my right. Through this, a single shaft of light fell into a pattern which told me there were iron bars on that one small window. At first, it seemed that I was alone in this place. I stood huddled and afraid, unable to move. Somehow, I had the feeling that soon I would not be alone. Then faintly, from out of the darkness ahead of me, I heard him coming with slow, shuffling footsteps. The walk of a man who had not long been without his eyes. I saw his cane first, a slim thread of white in the blackness before me. I watched it, tapping up and down in a nervous rhythm. Tapping, coming closer, closer. I felt the muscles in my throat tighten in an effort to scream. But I made no sound at all, nor did I move. I just stood there and waited and watched him come toward me. Then in the next instant, his face was caught in the shaft of light, and I saw him very clearly. The searing marks of pain were there, and with them the lines born of brooding and evil. And I looked for a long time at that face, and I found myself wondering if I could see behind those dark glasses. Would I find in his sightless eyes any sign of repentance? I remembered suddenly how Gregory Martin had looked the first time I saw him. His tall form standing with casual poise in the doorway. That handsome face creased by the broad smile that bid me welcome into his home.
Hello, Miss Blake. Come in, won't you?
Thank you.
Here. Let me take your bag.
Thanks.
Mrs. Martin isn't here just now, so I'll show you your room.
Oh?
I think you'll find it very comfortable. In fact, I hope you'll enjoy your life here and your work with me.
Oh, I'm sure I will. I'm a little overwhelmed to find myself actually about to work with the Dr. Gregory Martin. Oh.
When you've gotten your things unpacked and had the chance to catch your breath a bit, perhaps you'll join me for coffee.
Wonderful.
Then I'll show you through my laboratory.
I felt no fear at all that first day. My room was luxurious and beautiful, and the laboratory was beyond anything I'd ever imagined in its completeness. I didn't meet Lorna Martin during that first day as a member of the household, but in the evening her husband invited me to join the intimate group of friends that were gathered in front of a glowing fire in their living room.
And how about you, Professor? Let me fill your glass. I have my customary toast to make.
Yes, my boy, indeed. I want to join you on that one.
Attention, everyone. A toast. The toast. To the lovely Lorna. A woman of such abundant charm that it's unfair, really, for one man only to call her his. But 3 years ago, she made her choice, and I found that it was such a commendable one that I, for one, think we should forgive her. And so, here's to the lovely Lorna, my wife.
I joined in Dr. Martin's toast to his wife, and at the same time studied the faces of the people who were gathered in a semicircle around the room. There was a glint on the glass of one man's pince-nez that gave his face a weird, somewhat supernatural look. He was smiling broadly in the direction of Mrs. Martin, and his teeth in the light of the fire seemed to be made entirely of gold. I looked then at Lorna. She was looking past the others at her husband, and although she was smiling, I saw that there were tears in her brown eyes. Beneath her polish and exquisite breeding, she was insecure and afraid. Late that night after the party, I was thirsty, so I put on my robe and went quietly down the carpeted stairs. The big double door that led into the living room was closed, but I could see that a lamp was lit inside the room. And then as I passed by, I heard her. She was sobbing softly. I turned quickly to go back to my room. I didn't want to be placed in the embarrassing position of hearing something I shouldn't. But before I'd gotten out of earshot, I heard her sobbing stop suddenly with a noise that sounded like the flat of a palm hand hitting hard against a cheek. Next morning, I was working with Dr. Martin and loving every minute of it. We worked silently, swiftly, with no regard for anything outside of the task immediately at hand. That is, save for one little thing. Dr. Martin seemed fascinated with a little vial of amber liquid which he kept on a desk. Twice he abandoned his work to walk over to it, lift the glass container up to the window and study its contents, his lips forming a strange half-smile.
Why, yes. Yes, that's it, of course.
What? I beg your pardon, Dr. Martin. Were you speaking to me?
Oh, no. No, Miss Blake. Talking to myself, I expect. Scientists frequently do, I understand.
Yes, I've heard so.
My formula, Miss Blake. I just realized it's almost the color of her hair, isn't it? Alona's, I mean. My wife has very pretty hair, don't you think?
I think Mrs. Martin is a beautiful woman in many ways.
Well, that's a rather generous opinion to form in so short a time, isn't it? Do you always analyze people so quickly and so flatteringly? How about me, for instance?
Well, I don't think you're being fair, Doctor, but since you asked, I'd say you're a man of great charm and certainly a scientist of remarkable ability.
I should be pleased, I suppose. However, it sounds like generalities. I think I'll have to see what I can do toward creating a more specific impression. Yes. Truly beautiful color, isn't it?
I've never seen anything quite that shade of amber. What is it, Doctor?
It's a mixture of my own. I'll let you in on it someday, soon. But meanwhile, I'd advise you to keep clear of it. I think I could safely claim it to be the fastest-acting poison in existence.
A new experiment, Doctor?
The most exciting experiment to which a scientific mind can apply itself. And I have every confidence that I'll be able to work it out to a successful conclusion.
Sounds challenging, Doctor. I hope I'll be allowed to work on it, too.
I assure you, my dear Miss Blake, I wouldn't attempt this particular experiment without you.
Neither of us made mention of his poison again, and indeed it seemed that the doctor had quite forgotten. We were both working hard on the completion of his current project. Lorna Martin worked with us part of the time, and it was only then that I learned she had previously always assisted her husband with his work. It was, in fact, Lorna who suggested the final step that led him quickly to the result he had been striving for. We worked from early morning until late at night, and on the third day towards midnight, the project was completed. We had a late supper, and after a glass of liqueur, I left the doctor and his wife and went to my room. Yes?
I'm sorry. Were you asleep?
Oh, no. No, I was just sitting here relaxing, Doctor. I'm still too excited to do any sleeping.
Well, that's exactly how Lorna and I found ourselves feeling. So we decided to sit up and talk a bit over another glass of liqueur. We wondered if you'd join us. After all, this has been a three-way victory, Miss Blake. We want you in on our triumphal toast.
Oh, that's a generous thought. I'm afraid I wasn't much more than a spectator in this instance.
Oh, nonsense. Come along.
Well, I am certainly eager to talk with Mrs. Martin. I had no idea she was an active colleague of yours in the laboratory.
Oh, yes. Lorna's been of tremendous help to me. In the past, I would say she's been quite indispensable. Lorna's brilliant mind amazed me from the first moment I met her. Here we are. Lorna, my dear, Miss Blake and I were just having a most engrossing conversation, wholly about you. It seems Miss Blake has been greatly impressed by the work you've done on this idea of mine.
Oh, Dr. Martin, you're making it sound as if I'd minimized your own work. I didn't mean...
Of course you didn't. I do understand. And you needn't make apologies in my direction for your appreciation of my wife's talents. Here now. A liqueur for you, Miss Blake. Same as earlier?
Please.
There you are.
Thank you.
Lorna, dear, how about you? Your glass can stand a little replenishing, I should imagine. Now, let me see. No. Why, you still have some that you haven't even touched.
In the few seconds that had passed since Dr. Martin and I had entered the room, three distinctly sharp and clear thoughts had crossed my mind in sudden, quick succession. And each of them struck at my insides like the painful puncture of a thin, sharp blade. One, that Dr. Martin, professionally, was insanely jealous of his wife. Two, that it was totally unlike Lorna Martin not to speak to us as we entered the room. And three, that Dr. Martin had just gone over to his wife to make absolutely certain that she was dead. I stood there, unable to speak. Dr. Martin looked at me. He was amused. Amused at my reaction to his wife's murder.
I rather think I could read your mind quite accurately at this moment, Miss Blake.
Why? Why?
Why? Why does one do anything? What motivates any action of man? There is a need, a desire, a want behind every action. I wanted to kill my wife. It's as simple as that.
The poison.
Yes. Come into the laboratory. The poison. We'll look for it.
It isn't on your desk. You did kill her with it, but I don't see it. And why have you made it a point to have a witness? Well, I remember now. You talked of this as an experiment, and you told me I would work with you on it. Just what
patience,
you...
my dear girl, patience.
And what is the next step, Doctor? To call whom? The police? And tell them what?
When one discovers that one's wife has been murdered, one naturally calls in the authorities. Oh, yes, Sergeant. Listen carefully, please. This is Dr. Gregory Martin. My address is 12448 Pilgrim Drive. Would you send some men over immediately, please? My wife has just been murdered.
The complete realization of what he had done seemed to come upon me all at once. A sudden delayed shock that hit me with the impact of a hammer blow. I looked at him and he seemed a total stranger. A maniac whose next move I could not predict. He was laughing, and while he laughed, I reached desperately behind me, closing my fingers tightly around the glass container I felt in. And I prayed that it contained something that would serve as an effective weapon against the murderer. With one quick movement, I flung it full in his laughing face. And I watched it eat away his skin like a sheet of tissue paper in a soaring flame. When the police arrived, they found Lorna Martin seated erect and beautiful in the chair in the sitting room, while her husband writhed in pain on the floor of his laboratory. I was at Dr. Martin's desk, they said. I remember lifting my eyes to follow mutely the movements of the men who streamed into the room. Through the door, I could see them bending over the body of Lorna Martin, and I watched with a strange, detached curiosity as two interns administered temporary treatment to Dr. Martin's injury. Then they took us away. The three of us. I don't remember much about it.
Do you want to talk now? Come now, Miss Blake. We realize that you've been under a great strain. We want to find out exactly what happened, and we must know exactly what part you played. You know, in view of what has happened to Dr. Martin and his wife, a man so revered and well-known... we will be subjected to a great deal of pressure to bring someone to justice for this thing.
Justice? How can Lorna Martin ever know justice?
Let's hear your story, Miss Blake, from the beginning. There were three people alone in that house when this happened. And of them, only you were able to speak. Now, let's hear what you have to say. How about it? All right. You'll talk on the stand.
Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, help you, God.
It was like a dream, Stan. The setting now is a court of justice. And I sat numbly among strange faces and gesturing hands and questioning
now,
voices.
Please tell the court.
I could hear words tumbling towards me and then
well
so soft the way, only to return
Gregory
with
Martin,
renewed force.
Dr. Martin has been my close friend and associate for over a dozen years. His fine character cannot be questioned. He and his wife were an unusually devoted couple. This thing that has happened is shocking.
You were a frequent visitor in the Martin home for many years, Dr. Lee.
Yes?
Can you relate to the court any scenes you witnessed in the Martin household which might have an important bearing on this case.
I attended a gathering at the Martin home on the very night that Miss Blake first came there. She sat with us in the living room, and throughout the evening, I was aware of her studying Dr. Martin with a peculiar intensity. It was extremely odd.
As the medical examiner on this case, will you please tell the court your findings, which revealed the cause of Lorna Martin's death?
Mrs. Martin was poisoned. The poison was in liquid form, taken internally. It was obviously expertly prepared by someone well acquainted with scientific formulas. Someone who had access to an excellently equipped lab.
Tell the court whose fingerprints were found on the liqueur glass from which Lorna Martin drank the poison that killed her.
We found on the glass the prints of Mrs. Martin and those of Mary Blake.
And no others?
No, sir. No others.
Did you discover any more of the poison like that which was used to kill Mrs. Martin?
There were several drops of it left in the glass from which Mrs. Martin drank. Later, during our investigational search of the entire house, more of the poison was found.
And will you please tell the court where the remainder of that poison was found?
Yes, sir. In a perfume bottle on the dressing table in the room of Mary Blake.
The voices floated in and out and around the room. And some of the words hit against the walls and echoed back at me. Then I rode on into the front of the room, and the voices were loud and strange, and my senses seemed blocked by them, and by a hand that pointed towards me, and a face that swung down at me like an inflated comic balloon. I almost laughed. Perhaps I did.
Can you, Mary Blake, in any way account for the fact that only Mrs. Martin's and your own fingerprints were found on the glass of poison? Can you give the court any explanation for the perfume bottle containing the remainder of the poison being found in your room? Mary Blake, can you in any way explain the testimony we have heard repeatedly during this trial of your unusually strong personal interest in Dr. Martin?
The words were strung like beads on a string and wound round and round me until I felt them so tight it seemed I couldn't breathe. Then suddenly the voice that was strangling me with the words came through to me clearer and louder than ever before. And this time the words were built in a big stick and it was carefully aimed and swung straight toward me.
The prosecution at this time is able to bring forth its most important witness. We ask, however, that due consideration be given him by all those present in this courtroom, as his condition is still very serious. He has suffered from extreme shock. And as a result of the injuries he recently sustained, he is and will forever remain totally blind. Now, clerk, will you please inform the nurse outside that she may now bring the doctor into the courtroom? The prosecution calls to the stand Dr. Gregory Martin.
He came in, seated in a wheelchair. His hands and almost all of his face, save an open slit across his mouth, swathed in thick white bandages. There was something about seeing so handsome and powerful a figure so completely incapacitated. An involuntary gasp escaped from my own lips as well as from those of every person in the crowded courtroom. Without a word being spoken, the prosecution had easily scored its most effective point. And after Dr. Martin had finished his spoken testimony, the big stick of words came down upon me with full force.
Mr. Foreman, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, how do you find the defendant?
We find the defendant guilty as charged.
Then more words. Words coming at me with final flattening blows.
This court hereby sentences you to the Women's State Penitentiary for a period of not less than 99 years.
I found myself at the far end of a long corridor. The length of it stretching before me in a winding pattern. The walls of it of thick, impregnable cement. There were no windows, save for a small opening high on the wall to my right. Through this, a single shaft of light fell into a pattern which told me that there were iron bars on that one small window. At first, it seemed that I was alone in this place. I stood huddled and afraid, unable to move. Somehow, I had the feeling that soon I would not be alone. Then, faintly, from out of the darkness ahead of me, I heard him coming with slow, shuffling footsteps. The walk of a man who has not long been without his eyes. I saw his cane first, a slim thread of white in the blackness before me. I watched it, tapping up and down in a nervous rhythm. Tapping, coming closer, closer, I felt the muscles in my throat tighten in an effort to scream. But I made no sound at all. Nor did I move. I just stood there and waited and watched him come toward me. Then, in the next instant, his face caught in the shaft of light. And I saw him very clearly.
Mary, oh, Mary, oh, please wake up. Oh, come on now, get hold before you rouse the whole block. Come on now. Oh, we can't have this every night.
Oh, what's that dream? I can't stop dreaming. It isn't fair. It isn't fair. I don't belong here. I didn't do anything, but I'm here. He still won't leave me alone, not even in my sleep.
There, you see, Warden. That's the way it is every night. We can't seem to
That's
do
enough,
it.
That's enough, Matron. We're releasing Mary Blake.
What did you say?
You're free, Miss Blake. The nightmare is over. Come with me, and I'll tell you what has happened. Miss Blake, the state has no way of returning these weeks of freedom it wrongly took from you, nor of erasing the shock and heartbreak you've been forced to suffer. We can only hope that it has not too deeply embittered you and hasn't totally destroyed your faith in the justice one customarily finds in our courtrooms.
There seems to be a limit to bitterness, Warden. I find that what I feel now is not a release from injustice, but a release from fear. I know that he can never reach me again, even in my dreams. How can I be so sure of that?
Well, it's another of the things that can't be accounted for rationally about this case. It leads one to wonder if some metaphysical force wasn't put to work in place of the erring machinery of justice. Miss Blake, when you blinded Dr. Martin, you limited his vision to mental images. And over the period of time that has lapsed since the day you received sentence, it seems the doctor's mind would not free him from one particular visual experience. He, too, suffered from a recurring dream, which, due to his impairment, was inflicted upon his waking as well as sleeping hours.
The dream, did he describe it?
Oh, he did, in detail. It seemed that there was...
Slow, groping steps. I entered a narrow corridor. With my hands, I felt that the walls were of a thick, impregnable cement. The tap of my cane produced an echo that told me the corridor was one of interminable winding lengths. I did not want to enter nor walk through it, yet it seemed that I was forced to, and the walking, seemed endless. I wanted to cry out, but could find no voice. I wanted to see a single light from a window or an open door to know that there was somewhere an end to the blackness. But there was no light and no end. I wanted to turn back, but there was no turning back and no end to my walking. And although I had the feeling of being alone in this place, I knew that I was not alone and never would be. And it was worse than being alone. For though I could not see her, and though she did not touch nor speak to me, I knew she was there. And for me, she would always be there. Mary Blake, my accuser. For she is the innocent, and I am the guilty. And for the innocent, there is always a freedom. And for the guilty, there is never an escape.
Suspense, presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Miss Joan Bennett.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 4th of May, 1950 on CBS. Shirley Gordon, the writer of that episode, had another story adapted on Suspense less than a year later in a broadcast called The Death Parade that starred Agnes Moorehead. The show was nearly the same plot of Lucille Fletcher's Sorry Wrong Number, a about a woman who hears her murder plot over the telephone, a story which Moorhead performed 8 times on Suspense, and she also happened to be cast in Gordon's Death Parade story, where the main character discovers a murder plot in the form of a letter rather than on the phone. Not that there's any connection, but that was Gordon's last Suspense episode, and in the later 1960s, she would end up writing a few scripts for the TV show Bewitched, where Agnes Moorhead played the role of Endora in every episode. This is An Hour of Crime, on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now a syndicated episode of Peril from 1953 called Desperate Tuesday.
Peril. Stories of Suspense.
Scared, lady. You got nothing to be scared about if you behave yourself.
Never try to close a door on an expert. There. Come on in, Mike.
What do you want?
This is what we want, lady. A nice joint like this for a hideout. You here alone right now?
Yes.
Sid, have a look through the joint.
Right.
This picture here, lady. Who's the guy in this picture? Answer me.
It's my husband.
His name?
Chris.
Where is he now?
He works in town, Brownsville.
20 miles away. When does he get back?
About 6:30.
Got any kids?
No.
Anybody else live here with you? Better tell me, lady. I'm going to find out anyhow. And if I got to find out by myself, I might get a little rough.
My mother lives here with us. Mrs. Rutley.
Widow?
Yes.
That's all?
Just the three of us.
Where's your ma now?
Mom went to town to meet a friend. She'll be coming back with my husband in the car.
It ain't 2:00 yet. We got plenty of time to get ready for your ma and your husband.
The joint's clean, Mike.
Good. There are 2 others here, Sid.
Yeah, I heard a talk from the other room. Well, looks like a pretty good setup, Mike.
Yeah. Far out of town and no phone. Right up our alley.
What do you want here?
Like I said, a hideout.
How long are you going to stay?
I don't know yet. Maybe a few days, maybe a week. And don't think we can't do it, lady. You see, we ain't ordinary hoods on the run. We're the kidnappers of the Cantwell baby. But it ain't true what the papers say about us. We didn't kill the kid. It was an accident.
You killed 2 policemen.
Yeah. That wasn't no accident. But it won't be an accident if anything happens to you people here. Chairs waiting for us, lady. So it's a case of kill or be killed.
That was a good meal.
First decent chow we've had in weeks.
Mr.
Ellers. Mike Ellers.
Mr. Ellers, what if we do exactly as you and your friend say?
If you do, then maybe you won't get hurt.
We'll try something, Mike. All these law-abiding citizens are the same. They look for a chance and they try something.
We'll be ready for whatever they try, Sid. We'll play one of them against the other.
You can't watch all three of them all the time.
That's right. The husband's got to go to work every day. But while he's working, we'll be watching this one and the old lady. He'll know that if he opens his mouth, they both get it.
Car pulling up outside?
It's a dry cleaner. He calls every Tuesday.
Tell him you got nothing for him.
But he picks up one of my husband's suits every week. I've got to go. Besides, he's delivering some things.
All right. Get rid of it quick. And no tricks. But that guy won't ever deliver anything again. Sid, over here.
Yeah.
Go on. And get rid of him as fast as you can.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Boynton.
Oh, hello, Cliff.
Well, here we are. Men's suit, ladies' suit, ladies' coat. $2.35. I'll put the stuff inside here.
Oh, no, I'll take it.
Okay, here you are.
I ran out of cash this morning, Cliff. I wonder...
Oh, it's okay. That's okay. You can pay me when I call next week. Got something for me?
Oh, just one of Chris's suits. Here you are.
Clean and pressed?
Yes, please, Cliff.
Right. Say, what did you think of the high school football team Saturday, huh?
They did very well.
It was my kid who scored the winning touchdown, you know. Grabbed a pass on his 30-yard line. You should have seen him go.
Well,
70 yards without a Southport player laying a hand on him. I tell you, I was the proudest guy in the world.
Yes, you've got reason to be, Cliff.
You know, Bunny, that's my kid's nickname, he's had 11 offers of scholarships from different colleges.
Yeah.
He's got his pick out of 11 colleges, and it won't cost him a dime.
That's very nice, Cliff.
That trouble is, it's so hard helping them pick the right college. It's okay to play lots of football, but he's got to get an education, too. Oh,
yeah.
He's not going to be a delivery man like I am. No, sirree. Not that I don't meet real nice people, mind
you. Well, excuse me, Cliff, but if you don't mind, I have work to do.
Okay, Mr. Barton. I'll see you next week.
Oh, goodbye, Cliff.
You saved his life, lady. If he walked in and saw us, he was going to get a couple of bullets. You expecting any more visitors?
No.
Good. I want to relax. Say, what's in this box on the table?
Oh, it's a word game.
Scrabble.
Look at all them wooden blocks in there.
Each block has a letter and a number on one side. How do you play it, lady?
Oh, the directions are on the box.
You keep your eye on us, Sid. I'm going to have a look at this. Pretty quiet, Moore?
Oh, I was just thinking about you and Lois going away at the end of the week. I'm going away, too.
Oh, that's fine, Ma.
I don't like staying in that house by myself. Of course, it isn't much fun traveling alone.
Ma, look.
Yes?
Lois and I. It's not that we want to get away from you.
Isn't it?
Well, this trip, it's like a second honeymoon.
And a man doesn't take his mother-in-law on a honeymoon, eh?
Oh, I wish I could make you understand.
Oh, that's not necessary, Chris. I understand perfectly.
We don't want you to get angry with us. It's just that, well, Lois and I haven't gone away together for years.
We went to the shore last year. But of course, I was with you, so it wasn't a real vacation for you, was it?
Mom.
Oh, let's not talk any more about it. I'm going to have the time of my life, even if I have to do it alone. And please, Chris, don't drive so fast. I'd like to get home in one piece.
All right. I'll slow down. Hello, honey.
Hello, Lois.
Well, what's the matter, honey? Don't you have a kiss for...
Just hey. Take it nice and easy, people.
Gunman.
Sit down, lady. You look all white.
They came a few hours ago, Chris.
What is this?
Turn around, Buster.
What are you two doing here?
Don't play hero. Turn around or I'll slug you.
Don't do as he says, Chris. They're the Cantwell kidnappers.
Kidnappers? They killed a baby.
Shut up.
Baby killers.
You was told to shut up.
Killers? Oh, for heaven's sake, Mom, be quiet.
You're good at saving people, lady. First game, Sid.
Yeah. He's empty.
Right. Now listen to me. And listen real careful. The cops are after Sid and me. If we got through a roadblock, we'd be had to kill a couple of them. There's nothing that makes a cop madder than when one of his own is killed. And they're not going to let up on us. So we're going to have to sit tight for a while till things cool a little in this area. And you people are going to have to cooperate with us. If you don't...
Well, you know what you can expect. If you so much as touch these women...
Don't go making any threats to me, Buster.
I'm telling you.
Sid.
Right! You...
Oh, no, Chris, no.
Come on, Hero. Come on.
They'll kill you.
Like they killed that poor baby.
It was an accident, that baby. An accident, I tell you. The kid slipped from my hands and... But it won't be an accident if you people try to get tough. I'll finish off all three of you. All of you.
Please, yes, Chris. Please.
Yeah.
That's being smart, fella.
From now on, you do just like I say. You, Buster. You want your wife to live? You want the old lady to live?
Yeah.
Then don't try playing hero no more. We don't know how long we'll be here, but while we're here, you'll try to act as natural as you can. You, Buster, you can go to work every morning. But if you spill anything... Don't forget, we'll have these two. We'll use them as shields if the cops come. Or maybe we'll just shoot them and then fight it out with the cops. There's no telling what we'll do. But there's one thing you can depend on. If you try anything smart with the cops, Buster, you're laying the lives of these two women right on the line.
Hey, Mike, had a car pulling up. Hey, it's a cop's car. Maybe they know we're here.
Cops getting out of the car nice and easy. It's probably a checkup.
What do we do?
You, Buster. You and your wife in the kitchen with Sid and me. You're going to make a noise in there like you're washing dishes. And you, lady, you'll talk to the cop.
What? What will I say?
Whatever you do say, make sure it's the right thing. If it ain't... Sid and me'll be holding guns on these two. In the kitchen. Go on. Okay, lady. Open the door.
Well, Captain Brady. What can we do for you, Captain?
Can I come in?
Why, of course.
Thanks. Sounds to me like your daughter's got Chris really house-trained.
Yes, they're washing the dishes. You don't want to see them specially, do you?
Well...
Of course, if you think I'm too old to grasp whatever it is you want to say.
Oh, no, no, no. No, you'll do fine, Mrs. Rutley.
All right. What is it? Is the police force running another ball, or are you just selling raffle tickets this time?
No, no, it's a very serious matter, Mrs. Rutley. Very serious.
Oh?
You've heard of the Cantwell kidnapping?
Oh, yes. That poor baby.
Mm. Well, we caught the three kidnappers in a roadblock.
Three?
Yeah. Yeah, we got one, but they killed two police officers and got away in the woods. Later, they stole a car, knocked the driver unconscious. They ditched the car 7 miles down the highway. They tried to hide it in the bushes. We found it this afternoon.
Then you think they might be in this area?
Yes. Yes, I do. We want to get these two, Mrs. Rutley. And we will eventually. But we want them quickly, before they get a chance to kill again.
Yes.
It is possible that they might try to hide out around here, so... I want to warn you to keep your windows and all your doors locked.
You can depend on that, Captain.
And tell the others that if they see any suspicious men in this area, to contact us as soon as possible.
I'll do that, Captain.
Oh, incidentally, I know Chris has a hunting rifle. You tell him to keep it handy, just in case.
Yes, Captain.
Hey, what's this? You're playing a game of Scrabble, huh?
Yes. Lois and I were having a game.
Uh-huh. Well, you know what? One of you has been cheating.
What do you mean?
Well, this word here, N-I-X, Nix, that's slang.
Oh, well, we play by our own rules. We're allowed 3 slang words.
Well, are you allowed to misspell words, too? Look at this one. Peace. P-E-E-C-E.
Lois was just having fun with me.
Well, you couldn't play Scrabble like that in my house. The wife and the kids, they take that game too seriously. You know what? They even keep a dictionary on the table to check on all the doubtful words. Well, I suppose I'd better be moving, but I'll probably call again on the way back to town. Well, goodbye for now, Mrs. Rutley.
Goodbye, Captain.
Stay here in the kitchen till that car goes. Mm-hmm. Nice acting, lady.
Imagine that cop saying Nix wasn't no word. Everybody uses it. I hear it being used all the time.
He was right. Nix is slang. And the rules say you can't use slang.
Hey, lady.
Yes?
You know how to play this game, huh?
Yes.
Then sit down. Sid, you keep your eyes on them, too.
Don't worry about them.
All right, lady. Let's go.
I don't think
sit down. I like this game. There. That's 12 points for you, lady. Let me see. Yeah, that X. If I can only find a way to use that X.
I'd like a drink.
Can I get my wife a drink?
Go with him, Sid.
Okay. Come on. No funny business. Wait a minute. I'll have a look in there first.
All right. Go ahead and...
Well, what did you... Oh, my throat! My!
Let go of him, or I'll shoot.
Let go! Chris, please let go of him. Please.
You big hero. You lousy...
No.
I'll kill you with my bare hands.
That's enough, Sid.
But, Mike...
He's had enough.
But look. Look what's in the closet.
Hunting rifle, huh?
A dirty little crumb.
It was our own fault. We heard the cop mention the rifle. We should have got it right away.
Yeah. Well, come on, lady. Let's go back to that game.
Mike, he was going to use that rifle on us. You can't let him get away with that.
For the time being, Sid, we need him. He's got to go to work each day, so things look normal.
But if he pushes us again just once more, the women get it.
You hear that, Buster? You ain't just your... got your own life to be losing. It'll be your wife and Amar. Now, come on, let...
Hey, car lights. Come into the drive.
The cop car.
Yeah,
that cop said he'd be back. All right, fast. You, Buster, you stay here in the kitchen with me. You, Dame, sit in the living room. If you asked about this guy, he was tired and went to bed. Sid, you get behind the door in the other room. They're ready to start shooting.
We'll be back in a minute to Peril and our story, Desperate Tuesday.
Right now in air-conditioned comfort at Star Lanes. They're open 24 hours a day, so the lanes are open right now. Star Lanes, 291 Bypass at Cleveland Street.
Captain Baker.
Well, hello, Mrs. Barton. Hello, Mrs. Rutley.
Hello again, Captain. Oh, come in, won't you?
Well, thanks, I will.
Did you find those two men?
No. No, not yet. Where's Chris?
Oh, he was tired. He went to bed early.
Yeah. You haven't seen anything suspicious, have you?
No, we haven't.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'm pretty thirsty. Can I have a glass of water?
Oh, of course.
Well, I'll go in the kitchen and get it myself.
Oh, no, I have a cake in the oven. With your heavy weight, you may make it drop in the middle. I'll get you the water.
You ladies and your cakes. Well, Mrs. Rutley, you still playing this Scrabble, huh?
Yes, Captain.
That's a great game. That's a great game. My wife and kids play it all the time. I can see a good move right now. Well, reckon I better keep my mouth shut. Did you mention to Chris that I'd been here?
Yes, I did.
Did you tell him everything I'd said?
Everything.
Can't be too careful now, you know. Those two men are hunted rats. There's nothing they won't do. Oh, I wish I was playing this here game. I can see some beautiful moves.
And here you are, Captain.
Oh, thanks, Mrs. Barton. That's good. Your mother told you about my earlier visit, eh?
Yes.
Did Chris get that hunting rifle?
Oh, it's in the wall closet near the kitchen.
All ready to use?
Yes.
Those two men make an appearance. You tell Chris not to hesitate to use it. We don't care whether we get them alive or dead. Well, I won't bother you any more now. I'll leave you to that there game of Scrabble. Go on, sit down. I'll let myself out.
Oh, thank you, Captain. It's your play, Lois.
I'll just watch one play. You want to see if you do what I do, Mrs. Barton? Now, you go on.
Well, let me see. There. Just what I hoped you'd do, Lois. There.
Well, good work, Mrs. Rutley. A double, triple. Yeah, there's no doubt about you. Well, good night, all.
Good night, Captain. Well, did our acting satisfy you?
That was all right. You stay in the kitchen with him, Sid, till that car goes.
Right.
So he likes Scrabble, huh? Yeah. If he only knew I was playing that game.
I'm sick of this game.
Hey, why'd you do that for?
How can I play a silly game while you two are here?
I was far ahead of you anyhow. You would never have caught up. Okay, Sid, you can come out with a hero.
I thought that cup was never going to go. When he started to come into the kitchen for the drink of water.
Yeah, I was close. The ladies are doing a good job of saving lives. You'd better take a lesson from them, Buster.
You win. You've got us.
Of course I've got you. And now, lady, we're going to have another game.
I've had enough.
You've had enough when I say you have. Okay, let's get these blocks up.
Hey. What's the matter, Mike?
This old dame.
What is it?
She didn't mix these blocks up as good as she thought. Look, the last move she made, these four blocks.
Help! The word help!
And the cops saw it. And the word next to it, two guns. That was the word right near it.
They're just words. The captain didn't suspect anything.
If he didn't, it's because he's dumb.
They tried something again. I told you about people like this.
Yeah.
And they'll keep on trying things.
Not anymore.
Oh, Chris!
I gave you a break and you didn't take it. You want me dead, huh? Well, I'm gonna beat you all. You're gonna get it, the three of you, right now.
Window!
Drop the guns!
The cop!
Behind us, too!
Drop the guns, I shoot him down!
Fire!
Fire!
Mom, you were wonderful.
It just took a little common sense, that's all. The captain's smarter than I thought. He noticed that the word help couldn't have been used as I use it, because the H was under another letter. But he didn't let on. He just drove the car 100 yards down the street and ran back with the two officers.
Mom, Chris and I have had a talk about this vacation of ours. You tell her, Chris.
Yeah. We want you to come with us, Mom.
We do. We really do.
That's very nice of the two of you.
I'm going to get your train ticket today.
I already have my train ticket. I'm going in the opposite direction.
But, Mom, we want you to come with us.
I know. And I'd like to go. But if I don't go, then you'll be really happy when you see me again. I'm a little too old for honeymoons. Besides,
what are you doing with those Scrabble blocks?
There you are. Read it, Chris.
Freeze a crowd.
Have the time of your life. Make it a real second honeymoon.
And that concludes tonight's Peril story, Desperate Tuesday.
Peril, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated episode from 1953, bringing the curtain down on this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.